So thanks for coming back from your walk. I know you only got a short break, but we'll figure out the schedule soon. I want to talk this afternoon. Each afternoon at this time, we'll be exploring various heart practices. Today I want to start with the practice of self-compassion. And I'm a trained mindful self-compassion teacher, and I know there are some teachers here in the group that are also trained, and this will be very familiar to you because what I'm sharing it with you this afternoon comes directly from the teachings of Chris Germer and Kristen Neff, and they are both very long-term practitioners, go on many long-term retreats, and they have taken a component which seemed really needed, and that is that we become aware of things, but then we still seem to get stuck in blaming and criticizing ourselves and don't know what to do with all our sort of negative thoughts and unpleasant, unwanted emotions. So they developed mindful self-compassion. And first of all, I want to say if you're having difficult emotions or negative thoughts, I know we all heard James this morning give the instructions to practice with a kind, relaxed, interested awareness. And that's great. I'm totally for it. I think it's the best instruction. But I also think if you're not quite able to do that all the time, that's okay because you're just practicing. That's why we do practice. And it's very common for difficult thoughts and difficult emotions to come up during a retreat. They're part of any transformation. It's just like, turning on the light in a dirty room and then you start cleaning it up or cleaning your refrigerator and you find this old stuff that doesn't serve you anymore and you kind of need to chuck it out. So these things come up and how we handle them is really important. So throughout history, human beings have been into fight, flight, or freeze to defend ourselves against being attacked. And that means that our bodies are flooded with cortisol and adrenaline in order to respond to those attacks. But nowadays in modern society, most of our threats actually are not threats from the saber-toothed tiger, or we're not typically in war. But they're more threats to our self-concept. We still have those same reactions, but they manifest in different ways. So fight becomes self-criticism because we're both the attacker and the one who's being attacked. We turn against ourselves instead of out there, and we fight ourselves, and our body definitely gets flooded with cortisol and adrenaline. And a lot of this, if we do a lot, then it can easily lead to anxiety and or depression. They're strongly linked in the research with a lot of self-criticism. So that's the first one. Flight is we turn more to isolation or numbing. Last night I was talking about the intoxicants, and we all have our favorite ones, whether they're food or the internet or Netflix or whatever they are. Everybody does this to a certain extent, but that's another way of pushing away. And the third one is freeze, and that's when we can become self-absorbed and kind of go round and round with obsessive thinking. It's almost like we think, well, if we think enough about it, we'll solve the problem or it'll go away. And yet often we find ourselves just looping around over and over and over again. We don't want to even be thinking about it. It just keeps coming up over and over again. So that's more of a pattern of freeze. So All of these are very typical. If you find yourself doing them, it's not that you're doing it wrong or you're bad or you're somehow abnormal. This is just part of the pattern that we've all inherited. But there are ways that we can better deal with these tendencies. For example, the tendency of fight can be responded to by kindness. So instead of fighting ourselves, being kind to ourselves. And the tendency of flight, or which is isolating or numbing or using intoxicants, can better be responded to by a sense of common humanity. That is, realizing that all people have similar problems. Whatever you're experiencing, you can be pretty sure that there are millions of people also experiencing it. So just knowing that it's part of being alive, it's part of being a person, you're not alone with this, can be kind of soothing. And the tendency of freeze, where we just become self-absorbed and go round and round and round in our thinking, can be handled with mindfulness, being aware of what's happening while it's happening without judging ourselves. So I wanted to lead you through what I think are what I've been trained in mindful self-compassion and seem to be really appropriate, supportive ways of responding to these situations. What I wanted to start out with is soothing touch. And we're going to do this with our eyes closed so that we kind of reduce embarrassment. You may be, however you're touching yourself, other people aren't watching you, they're feeling for themselves. So just close your eyes and tune into your breathing for a few minutes. Give yourself a little grounding by feeling your feet connecting wherever they are with the floor, with the earth. And your hands wherever they are. And the sounds in the room. Now we'll begin by putting one hand on the heart. This is a way that many people like. If you press in a little bit, you actually potentiate the release of oxytocin, which is a hormone that is the trusting bonding hormone. And all women get flooded with it when they give birth because it's a way of ensuring that the baby will survive because the mother is flooded with this bonding hormone. But also men have it, all humans have it. So, just connecting with your heart. And now try putting a second hand on your, over the first hand. See how that feels. And what you're tuning into the most is this soothing? And we're exploring various various touches to see which will be the most soothing for you. Because it's been shown that gentle vocalizations, warmth, and soothing touch are wonderful for mammals. You know, when you see a small child upset, you touch them a little bit. You might stroke them or hug them, kiss them, whatever. In this case, we're just doing this for ourselves. And there's starting to be more of a movement for men in mindful self-compassion. And in that, and some of the men prefer having a fist on the heart. So whether you're a man or a woman, just explore that. How does that feel when you put your hand in a fist and put it on your heart? And you're just noticing your reactions. Does this feel better? And then try putting the other hand over that fist, the other hand unclasped. So you're covering the fist with your second hand. And then take your top hand down to your belly and put it on your belly. Some people like to rub it around a little bit. And you can either leave the hand on your heart in a fist, or if it feels better, just open it up. And check in how this feels for you. And now move the hand from your heart down to cover the other hand. So you have two hands on the belly. You're just exploring here. Some touches will feel better than others, and everyone's different. So you're just exploring what feels the most soothing to you. And from here, we're going to a small hug. So put the opposite hand on the shoulders. You can rock a little bit. See if this feels soothing and supportive. And now put one hand in your lap and put one hand on your cheek. We often do this with children or loved ones, just as a way of acknowledging them, paying attention to them, giving them support. How does that feel? One hand on your cheek. And then let's put the second hand on your cheek. Some people like both hands on their cheeks. Okay, now I'm going to give you a few moments just to explore, or a few minutes actually, just to explore what feels the most nurturing. If which one of these calls to you, like all of a sudden you're in line, they're having a special dessert, and they run out right before you. If you were going to give yourself a gesture, what would it be that would say, oh, that's too bad. I'm so sorry. But just play with these various ones, review, and see how you feel in your body. What really soothes you? This soothing touch is a very quick way. You don't have to get wordy about it particularly. It's just a very quick way of sort of reassuring yourself, just like a mother would reassure a small child. Just saying, hey, it's really okay. I'm with you. So when you find some disappointment or you run into something that's tough, just using this physical gesture often can be enough. You don't have to really go further with it. But I would like to now teach you the mindful self-compassion break, which uses this soothing touch, because it's a little bit more drawn out or fulfilled. And it's a three-step practice, I would say, of all the practices that I teach in mindful self-compassion. If people just learn this one and use it frequently, it can make a big difference in their life. So there's three steps to it. The first one is mindfulness. And that counteracts that tendency to freeze and overthink things and go round and round in loops. It's just the mindfulness that we're practicing this whole week here. Just knowing what's happening while it's happening without judging it. So when we come across some suffering, you know, if we were out and about, we might just turn to our cell phone because we don't want to feel the suffering, or turn to some food, or play an internet game, or whatever we do. But here we don't have all those, so we turn to mindfulness and just go, whoa, this is suffering. Or this is a moment of suffering. Because the nice thing about mindfulness is it doesn't deny or push away, but it also doesn't overreact. It doesn't make a rainy day into the worst day of my life. It's just a rainy day. And so just saying, whoa, this is suffering, or this is a moment of suffering, or ouch, this hurts, this is hard, this is tough. However you say it, it's just acknowledging to yourself, whew, this is tough. You don't get into the, oh, I wish it didn't happen, or if only I would have done this, or why did they do that? None of that. It's just, this is suffering. So that's the mindfulness aspect, and you all know how to do that. And the second aspect is common humanity. And in our Western cultures, this is huge in the United States, but it's probably fairly big here too. We sort of think if we're doing it right, we won't have a problem. We can be so achievement-oriented. And then we think the opposite. If we have a problem, we must be doing it wrong. But that's denying the fact that, as the Buddha said, if we have a body, if we're lucky enough to live long, we'll get old, we'll get sick, we'll die, we'll be separated from all that's near and dear to us. Suffering is just plain part of life. So rather than isolating ourselves and thinking we're so bad because if we would be better, we wouldn't be suffering, it's just acknowledging, this is part of life. I'm not alone. And like I said earlier, there are probably millions, if not billions, of people suffering in the same way as you are. And the third step is, rather than fighting ourselves with self-criticism, it's turning towards ourselves with kindness. And this is where you can be a little creative, because you sort of ask yourself, what do I need right now? So it might be, may I be kind to myself? Or it might be, may I accept myself? Or if that's hard, it might be, may I learn to accept myself? May my retreat be of value to me? May I learn exactly what I'm supposed to know from this situation? There's a lot of ways. I wouldn't get into a whole paragraph or novel about it, but just a simple sentence responding to what you need. So in neuroscience tells us that if we want to learn a new habit, it's really much better to practice little and often. And what's meant by that is that you don't start on the toughest thing. Just like you don't go to the gym and begin by lifting the 15 kilogram weights. You start with the lighter weights and you move up. And that's a good way to learn. So for us, we start practicing with the smaller problems. We don't wait till we're in the hospital with a bunch of tubes coming out. And while we're sitting here, we don't conjure up the biggest, worst problem. We start with something that's manageable. So I want you to think back. It could be easily from today, or it could be from your daily life. Could be a health problem, could be something you've been trying to accomplish and you're working at it and you're kind of frustrated. It could be a relationship problem. It could be a job problem. Could be anything, but like, let me sort of stress that it, on a scale of 0 to 10, it's about a 5. It's not the worst problem. It's not unmanageable. It's just practice, like starting with the light weights. So pick some problem in your life and just have it be enough so you can sense a little bit of stress in your body when you think about it. Maybe your stomach tightens a little bit or some kind of constriction. Your stomach or your throat or your heart or your teeth clench or something. Just feel a little constriction. So just bring something to mind. Okay, and raise your hand if you don't have anything, you can't think of anything, any suffering whatsoever. Okay. So hopefully you haven't picked your worst problem, because you're building up strength. You're just picking something. All right. So now the first thing is acknowledging it. This is suffering. And really feel in your body how you're resisting it. You're tensing with it. You're reacting. Don't get into the story of it so much. You know the story already. But just acknowledge, or you can say, ouch. Or you can say, this hurts. So the second step is acknowledging common humanity. That is, I'm not alone here. Suffering is part of life. Everyone goes through their hard times. Whatever words along those lines that work best for you. And now the third step is turning towards ourselves with kindness. So find that soothing touch. It could be your hand on your heart. It could be giving yourself a hug. It could be rubbing your belly or your hand on your cheek. Whatever is soothing for you. Kind of relaxes you. It's great to be hugged or touched by a friend, but since we're on retreat by ourselves, actually we also get that oxytocin, that soothing, relaxing, trusting hormone from just touching ourselves. And now is the time to turn toward yourself with kindness, with a simple sentence. Like, it could be as simple as, may I be kind to myself? Or, may I learn to accept myself? May I trust that I'll know exactly what to do? Ask yourself, what do I need right now? What is the sentence that I'd most like to hear? Okay. And you can come back. Now, I want to give a little time for questions in case anybody is not quite sure what we're doing or why we're doing it or anything about this approach. Yeah, Suzanne.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's something in your voice that melts my heart I noticed in the part where we notice that this is something that, you know, common humanity, said that everybody suffers. Mm-hmm. I noticed that there is this voice in my head saying that because everybody has got this same kind of suffering, you shouldn't be, you know, showing your suffering. Mm. Like, be strong, don't show it. Mm. Everybody hurts. And, that was kind of like meaningful for me because I noticed that...
Good to notice that. Yeah. Would you say that to a friend? No. A good friend?
No.
No.
Immediately I became interested, you know, where does this sound come from?
All right.
Who is this speaking inside you my know? Head?
Yeah, you know what? We all were raised with a lot of messages, and many of them were actually the deeper intention is parents want to keep their children safe. We're mammals, and we need to be accepted in the group. And if our child gets kicked out of the group, that's the end. I mean, traditionally throughout history, we're so interdependent. We can't live on our own. So parents gave their children a lot of messages that were not actually so helpful, but they thought they were the right things to keep them safe and keep them going.
Usually the ones they heard.
What?
Usually the ones that they heard.
Yeah, too. Yeah. Just passed through the centuries, you know? So I heard that similar. I heard buck up. That's the English thing. Keep your chin up. You know, my father was a commander of a ship in World War II. So, you know, he just wanted me to be strong, right? So, yeah, we hear those messages. There's no point in saying, oh, why did they tell me, you know, and getting all involved with that. They did the best they could. But now's your chance to hear them. Usually we're so busy. So this is your chance to hear them and say, maybe I can try a different way, a little kinder way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, Evelina.
I tend to, when you say, like, pick a problem that's, like, level 5.
Yeah.
I tend to go to deep waters immediately, like 10, 10, and 10.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that happens, and then it gets really hard for me to think about problems that are not so difficult. But I don't know why it happens, or it doesn't feel like exhausting, or it's too much. But if the instruction is pick a number 5 thing. And
so you say it doesn't feel too much. It feels okay for you to pick a 10.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with this problems every day. So.
Well, I would say trust yourself. You know, most people, if they go to the gym and they start working on the 30-kilogram weights before they do the lighter ones, they're going to hurt themselves. But you're the final authority, so if you can learn as much from going right to the 10, or maybe it's been with you all day anyway, so you say, okay, let's get down to it, you know. Just see. What I want is for you to have a confident enough experience that you'll keep using this practice. And if you pick something too overwhelming and you get flooded with, and you don't feel competent, you don't feel like you're capable of handling it, you won't use it. You know? So I want it to really be a tool. But you're an experienced meditator, so I think you know what you can handle, so I would leave it to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anybody else? I do want to just mention the whole idea of backdraft. And that's a term that Chris Germer came up with. He's the, along with Christian Neff, created mindful self-compassion. And it comes out of the firefighting. When firemen go to a house and the house is on fire, they're very careful about opening the door, because when they open the door, the oxygen rushes in and it makes a bigger fire. And that can be even more dangerous. So they sort of go around poking holes to let off some oxygen in. So The metaphor is that if our hearts have been really hot with suffering, and then we bring kindness to it, it's kind of like the suffering is similar to the fire in the house, and the kindness is similar to the oxygen. We put on oxygen and it goes, poof. And I've had experience with this where I've been, my hardest retreat was a metta retreat. And you think loving kindness and you think, oh, I'm going to go and be loving and kind and wise and blissful for a week. And, you know, sometimes you say, well, may I be safe? And the mind goes, safe? You're not safe. What are you kidding? And read the newspapers. Get over it. You know, and then on and on like that. So, if this happens and you're trying to be kind to yourself and actually it's like you're getting this reaction like, are you kidding? Or things are much worse than I thought they were. That's just part of the cleaning the refrigerator. That's letting all that stuff come out. You can examine those thoughts kindly and say, this is tough. You know, how can I be kind to myself now? How can I reassure myself? So just know you're on the right path. These thoughts are coming up for everyone. I've even been so naive as to think, well, everyone's getting it. Everyone's in the fourth jhana and I'm sitting here slogging along with my difficult emotions and thoughts. Well, that's not true. You know, most everyone, especially in the beginning of a retreat, is just kind of churning through it. So, you're not doing it wrong. I just want to emphasize that you're not doing it wrong. You're just taking a look at some of the things that you haven't either had time to look at or the space or the support or whatever. And now they have a chance to come up and come out and you can say, well, that's a limiting belief. I really don't want to hold on to that one and let go of it or whatever. But just kind of cleaning out the refrigerator. Any other questions, reactions?
Can I just say something? And just along with that, besides when the backdraft comes, besides the self-compassion, it can be helpful to just resource yourself and just ground yourself and just, if it's too much, you can always open your eyes, look around, feel yourself on the ground, your feet on the ground or your body touching the earth, and just, you take it a little bit at a time. So, oh, that's a lot? Okay, how can I just get a little bit of space? And then when you feel like you're up to it, just go back there a little at a time, what I sometimes call titrating your dukkha. Titrating is just a little at a time, just a touch it and then come back like that.
Yeah, great. So there's the thought that the further in, it can be the harder. So some people resource themselves with the breath and that's grounding, but others take it more to the extremes of the body because you're getting further away, touching the floor, feeling your hands, that's grounding. Like James said, opening your eyes, go for a cup of tea, go for a walk. But just know what you're doing, you know, now I'm walking. I'm walking because I want to balance myself. That's a good thing. That's not running away from your problems. That's just getting yourself balanced with what you're doing.
And another way to feel that resourcing is just asking yourself, well, what do I really need right now?
Right.
You know, what will serve me right now? And really listen for the answer.
Good. If you're sitting in the hall and you don't want to just get up and leave and start walking, you might practice hearing meditation because that takes you a little further. You're still here, but you're just listening to the sounds. Okay, any other questions about it? Comments? Okay. Okay, well, let's just sit for about 3 minutes, and then it'll be time for supper.